Welcome to Vi's Land. We got a great episode for you. In this episode, Mikey, what are we going to be talking about?
We are going to go over the last 10 number one picks in the NBA draft. And what we're going to do, we've been doing a lot of career rankings. We're going to project the career rankings of these 10 players from 2010 draft to the 2019 draft. So we have 10 number one overall picks. Very luckily, I got to see a lot of these guys as prospects and in high school. A number of them played in the Nike Hoop Summit, which is an event that I've gone to for over 10 years and have covered the last eight up until this. Zion Williamson, unfortunately, didn't play in it. He went to it. But most of these guys ended up playing in the event. So had a lot of firsthand experience. Seen a lot of these players, and yeah, we're just going to try and rank them how we think they're going to finish their career.
Yeah, because it's still, you know, the jury's still out on a lot of it. You know, there's a lot of debate, and, you know, luckily, thanks to the recent NBA rules, we did get to see all of these players in college as well, some for...
Yeah, well, the other thing, Jason, is that all of these players were one-and-dones in college, too.
Yeah.
The past 10 drafts have been all one and done players. This is like the first season where we really have a chance to possibly have a guy like LaMelo Ball who took the overseas route, still kind of considered a one and done, but we could shake it up. The one right before John Wall was Blake Griffin, who spent 2 years at Oklahoma, but everyone since then has just spent 1 year in college.
So let's go. We're going to go break down the projected careers. Well, how are we going to rank the top number one picks of the 2010s draft? So from 2010 to 2019. So let's start it with our number 10 selection. Michael, who is that going to be?
Yeah, we're going to go in reverse order. And this one was made pretty simple for us.
Yeah, kind of like you look at the list, it kind of breaks down to like a few different kind of tiers when you look back on it, but this one is in a tier on its own, and that's gonna
unfortunately it is. And this was a tier that is pretty unusual for a number one pick. It was a surprising number one pick. That's one thing we'll absolutely say.
In a super,
it was shocking
draft. Like, I mean, obviously Giannis came out of that draft, but
yes,
overall not a strong draft. So that's going to be Anthony Bennett from UNLV. Yes.
Anthony
First
Bennett.
NBA player ever to be selected number one, which everyone was kind of thinking it was,
sure,
you know, Wiggins for a very, very long time. And then Bennett comes in that year before Wiggins is eligible.
Yeah. Well, I was lucky enough where Anthony Bennett and Andrew Wiggins played together in the 2012 Nike Hoop Summit. Anthony Bennett looked fine. Like, he was good. He played all right in the game. He actually had this miraculous long three-pointer that kind of sealed the game for the world team. Wiggins looked like the much better prospect to me. They both – Wiggins even was measured taller. Bennett, of course, was very strong. He had a good freshman year at UNLV. Nothing that really screamed number one pick. Like, he was pretty efficient. He shot well from three on a low sample size.
Really. You know, he wasn't one of those, like, you know, there have been prior one and done guys, and you'll see guys later in this list that were, like, really good in college, where it's like, it was fine.
Yeah, it was also the draft. Like, that was another thing. This draft, it was up in the air who was going to be the number one pick. And the guys that – there were two names I remember. People thought Cleveland was going to take a big man. And the two names that were showing up before the draft were Nerlens Noel out of Kentucky and Alex Len, who was at Maryland, had a really good game against Kentucky, had a solid sophomore season at Maryland as well. Both around 7 feet. Nerlens, of course, was seen as a prolific defender. He could get off the floor like really well for a big man. And then he had like some lateral ability, always got a lot of steals, was a rim protecting threat. But he had also torn his ACL that year. So he had a shortened season. Kentucky didn't play exceptionally well that year. They actually went to the NIT. Nerlens wasn't there. But yeah, and I remember Nerland showed up to the combine also and weighed like 208 pounds.
Yeah,
like, because there were concerns there.
No, this was like, it was an interesting draft, and there was really no consensus. I mean, obviously now we look back, we're like, who wouldn't take Giannis? But I mean, Giannis went 15, so there's 14 yeah. you know, teams that are kicking.
That's absolute hindsight. Yeah, Giannis looked really good on tape, but he also was playing second division in Greece.
Yeah,
and you know, people like, didn't. He wasn't.
Depot goes 2.
Yeah,
but again, it wasn't like, it was just a weird draft. Like it's one of those drafts. Like, I don't think at the time anyone seemed like a number one pick.
Well, you have to have a number one pick.
But someone has to. I know someone has to do it. But
it's bound to happen.
Yeah.
but yeah, the thing you were absolutely right about is nobody was really slotted in there.
Yeah, no one had that.
Nobody like. Every draft since then, you kind of had an idea of who was likely going number one. And the next year, I feel like it changed. Like in 2014, there was a guy who people thought was going to go number one, and he gets hurt, and therefore a different guy. But you still kind of felt that guy was probably going number one. Every draft since then, you usually have a guy who's kind of separated himself. This draft did not have that.
Yeah.
And that's what made Anthony Bennett such a surprise. The thing that Cleveland said with him is they felt he popped off the tape. He was a strong guy, and he was pretty athletic. He had some shooting potential. The one thing I do remember, like I remember him in his third game in college, he goes up against Oregon. And I remember him dominating that game. But at the same time, if you're talking about a guy who's going to defend the perimeter or anything like that, like I think Cleveland had this idea that maybe he would be able to slot in at like either forward spot. And that just wasn't going to be the case.
Yeah.
He wasn't very tall. He had long arms. I think he had like a 7'1" wingspan, but he laterally not very great. And then the thing that you hear about with Cleveland is that as soon as it came to something with adversity or anything like that, he had issues there. And his rookie year, I think, was like an unmitigated disaster for a number one pick. And you just didn't get that much upside from it. That next season, they draft Andrew Wiggins number one, Cleveland. And then they do the Kevin Love trade once they get LeBron. So that was really offloading him while he was probably at his highest peak, because there wasn't much trade value after that.
Yeah, you know, like you look at it, you know, career high, 5.2 points per game in that 2014-15 season. He started 4 games in his career and, you know, hasn't been in the NBA since 2016-17. He has kind of touched the G League. He signed a training camp deal with the Rockets.
And played well in the G League. Like, I think he's like a guy who could possibly be like at the end of an NBA bench or somewhere around there, most likely would have done pretty well in Europe maybe. But yeah, it just an absolute disastrous number one pick, unfortunately. And those expectations shouldn't have been on him. Cleveland just made the wrong move.
No, oh, totally. And it's just, yeah, it's just tough because again, like you're going to look back on this list that we're making in the tiers, and he's the only one from that this past decade that's out of the league completely.
Yeah.
Will he come back?
And just, you know, was never even like a rotation guy on like a good team or anything like that. And that's one thing you'll see with our next two players. They at least have the chance to be that. But yeah, Anthony Bennett was a complete different kind of number one pick. Like he may go down as one of the worst number one picks of all time, unfortunately. Hey, could still turn around. You never know.
No,
we're rooting for the guy, but it certainly seems like the NBA is behind him. And yeah, the other thing is Chris Grant was the general manager in Cleveland at the time, and everybody blamed him for this pick. It comes out later from David Griffin, who is now was the general manager of Cleveland once they brought LeBron back and looked a little better. That Chris Grant was like the one guy who didn't want to take Anthony Bennett.
and the thing for Cleveland, truthfully, is like they end up getting LeBron anyway, and they win their
championship. Oh yeah, yeah. They end up making the right move.
Yeah, it's not like it swung the franchise back a decade, you know, by making it one bad choice. It's
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
They were lucky to be in this kind of interesting position where it's like, yeah, in hindsight, they've moved on.
Yeah, so the pick looks worse, like, for when it happened as opposed to what results came from that pick.
Yeah, and it also looks worse when you know what Giannis is today. But again, like, that was a massive wild card mystery. And there's 14 other teams that are, like, kicking themselves because they could have had
him. But, yeah, that's what makes the draft so unpredictable. And, and the other thing you'll notice with a lot of these number one picks didn't end up being the best player necessarily in their draft class.
Yeah.
A number of them did, but, yeah, there are – I would say you want the number one pick because you have an idea of how good of the player that, you know, that guy will be. But, yeah, it doesn't necessarily always mean that they're going to be the best player in their draft class.
Yeah, totally. And then, you know, for Anthony Bennett, he just unfortunately becomes this Jeopardy, you know, answer of who was the first Canadian to go number one in the draft. And, you know, that's just the breaks. I mean, we wish him the best. I hope he can, you know, still maybe go play overseas a little bit more. He played a little bit, but, yeah, he just hasn't – he scratched the league. He never became a rotation guy. And it's kind of a sad thing to see from a number one, you know, pick in the draft. But let's move on to number nine. Number nine is another player who's kind of had some ups and downs. He's still, again, pretty young early in his career.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, definitely got off to a very auspicious start, to say the least. And that is going to be Markelle Fultz.
Yeah. This was definitely a different scenario than Anthony Bennett. He looked, first off, the draft that he was in was much better. They were high on a number of the players in that draft. And Markelle, while he did not win very many games during his freshman season at Washington, looked really good.
Really good. Yeah, he looked great. The free throw shooting was, like, I mean, to me at the time,
it was low. That was the one thing. He had a low free throw percentage. He shot very well from three. And then the other thing he did really well was, like, first off, create for himself. And he was this creative finisher around the basket, could get to the basket. He was a really good pull-up shooter in college.
College, yeah.
Yeah. Really good pull-up shooter. Yeah, like, the fact that he could create shots off of the dribble, you saw the upside there. And then you felt like once he went to Philadelphia where they had Simmons and Embiid, you were kind of expecting him to shoot. You thought he could be another playmaker, ball handler, and shooter. The major thing there that we didn't anticipate was that he would have all these issues with his jump shooting and just shooting in general, his confidence, the shoulder issues as a rookie.
Yeah, it was like shoulder plus ankle. It just, you know, he kind of like this, you know, this year so far, I mean, he started 59 games for Orlando. He's getting 12 points a game. He's actually got his free throw percentage up, you know, like 16 to like 72%.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, okay.
Yeah, but he's headed in the right direction.
Yeah, no, he's definitely headed on the way up, but I don't think he'll ever take over all-star status.
Yeah, well, it certainly doesn't look like he was the player that everybody had anticipated, and the fact that he was headed in the right direction, looking like a rotation guy for a playoff team, and still doing some of the things that, you know, people were always really high on him. Like, he had defensive potential as well, just had instincts as a basketball player. I was lucky enough to see him a few times in high school, and he was, when I first moved back to Portland from Toronto, it was the Les Schwab Invitational, and DeMatha Catholic came, Markelle Fultz was there, and he was the star of the show. He played Garfield, and I felt like Garfield had possibly a better team than DeMatha Catholic. Markelle made all the difference in the world going up against two guys who were really highly ranked guards for Garfield. And he like just completely obliterated them. It was Jalen Noel and Dejon Davis. And I just remember like the first few possessions, him blocking them way above the rim. He was shooting. He was finishing around the basket. They lost to Oak Hill in the finals, but even then he gave a really good effort there. And there was just something about him. And then he goes to the Hoop Summit and plays really well there also. I had seen him at Nations that summer and was very high on him as well. At the Hoop Summit, like, he was kind of the talk of the Hoop Summit just because of all the potential that he brought, with the fact that he could run a pick and roll. He was this tall, long point guard you thought could potentially be a primary initiator. And he still does have some of those skills, but the shooting just hasn't really been one of them.
Yeah,
that's like the major difference as far as where he ends up being as a player.
Yeah, when I think in today's NBA, I mean, he's that guard that you want to be scoring, and he shoots 25% from three. Like, hopefully that gets.
Yeah, he still hasn't gotten the shot.
Yeah,
hopefully that's a big thing. Better,
but that's like,
that changes the projection big time.
Yeah, that's why it changes his career projection, because it's like, even if he gets a little bit better, that's still not going to be like elite.
No. And it's like, yeah, him being an elite shooter wasn't necessarily always what people thought he was going to be, but they at least thought he would be above average. And he still has a way to go to get there.
I'm just saying, for him, like, when you go further down our, you know, the list today, it's like, some of these guys are some of the, you know, the top players in the, you know, the league, or, you know, going to be for a while. And it's just, yeah, for him, I just don't.
Well, it's why we have him number 9. I still think there's a chance he could move up the list, but, and I really like the strides that he's made this year. The fact that, you know, you could probably play him next to somebody else, that other person just needs to be a really good shooter as a guard.
Yeah, and, you know, he's 2022, but as far as, you know,
so very young, absolutely
projecting out, we're going to keep him at this spot for now on the list. Yeah. But and you look at other guys in that draft, you know, you got Lonzo.
Yeah, Jason Tatum. That's the guy that – so Boston ends up trading that pick. Philadelphia and Boston make that trade. And Boston, the rumor with Boston was that the guy they think will be at 3 was the guy that they wanted at 1. And that was Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
So they get value out of that trade, and then they get the guy that they want. And early on, he's looking like possibly the best player out of that draft. You have Donovan Mitchell. You have De'Aaron Fox. You have some good players. But, yeah, Jason Tatum. The big thing with Boston is they look for, you know, mental acuity and strength and all these things. And they must have seen that in Jason Tatum.
Yeah. No, it's a pretty decent draft. I mean, it's definitely got a few
really good draft. Absolutely.
You know, few strong guys. I mean, like De'Aaron Fox, who like hasn't made an All-Star team, but like, he could, like, that's definitely the realm of possibility. But yeah, Markel Fultz is a little more uphill.
Yeah. And even Lonzo Ball, you know, he, I think, took a very positive step this year. Neither of them have become the star that you kind of anticipated being the number 1 and 2 pick in the draft, but still, I think both very solid role players at this point, or at least on that track to become one.
Yeah. And then moving on with our list, we got another player who, honestly, like, looking at the numbers, like, good, but he's never, you know, reached that pinnacle of greatness, taking that next level to elite. And that is going to be Andrew Wiggins.
Yes.
That was a number 1 pick by Cleveland.
It was by Cleveland. So LeBron James comes to Cleveland in free agency. He's going back, and he writes this letter with help from Lee Jenkins, I believe. And he mentions Kyrie Irving, Tristan Thompson, Dion Waiters. Doesn't mention the guy that they just chose as the number 1 pick in the NBA draft, and Andrew Wiggins. So you could kind of see that possibly being a thing where he might have been on his way out. And it turns out that they wanted a more established player, and they just felt like Kevin Love was at a level already where if you add him to a team with LeBron James and Kyrie Irving, good things can come of that. And it turns out that in 2016, they were absolutely right. In 2015, Kevin Love gets hurt and everything. In 2015, Andrew Wiggins also wins NBA Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. And you look at his career numbers. I mean, he hovers around 20 points a game. So it's not like, you know, he's had a poor career. It's just he's never really taken the elite level steps. Like, All-Star does not seem likely for him in the future. So he's kind of just like, he's a good offensive player, and that's fine. And it'd be interesting to see what the future does hold for him if he does get to stay around in Golden State.
Absolutely. And then the other thing is, if he could possibly get into that Harrison Barnes role, the big thing with him, and some people had concerns about him even entering the draft and felt like he was being maybe projected a bit too highly based on his athletic gifts, which you can just see from a run jump perspective. The guy definitely jumps off the tape. He is just absurdly athletic. And his dad played in the NBA. His mom was an Olympic sprinter. And Andrew just, he looks like a runner, and he can jump out of the gym. It doesn't necessarily, he doesn't necessarily use that functionally as well as you would hope. And I think a big part of that is the strength. And I got to see Andrew Wiggins in that first Hoop Summit where I attended all the practices in the game. That next year he comes back and is considered the number one player in his high school class. He had reclassified, but really had gone back to his original class. And people just were looking for energy that second year. The other thing I noticed, though, was that he had not gained any weight. And that was a bit of a concern. You were, because it looked like, he had a body and shoulders where he could possibly put on some weight and really use that athleticism. But even if you look in when he's at Kansas, Jabari Parker, who played a different position, technically, they saw them both as small forwards, but Jabari Parker was really kind of a big in college. And he had, I think, 25 more dunks than Andrew Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins could jump, but he wasn't necessarily using that as well as one might think. He had the spin move, but he's not the most creative ball handler either. Not the best passer. That was the other thing. They wanted Wiggins to be a more complete player.
Yeah. They'll just have be able to defensively, hold his own.
That's a big part.
Has been a problem. And, I remember watching him, because there has been a lot of hype around him, prior, even him being in high school as this, kind of future guy of Canada basketball. And then I remember at Kansas is watching a lot of those games and thinking not much about him as much as this teammate of his, who's the Joel Embiid guy? And because Joel Embiid was
jumping off the tape.
Yeah, this Joel Embiid guy, he seemed to get better, every time he touched the ball, he was improving.
Absolutely.
So it's just that guy had, so much potential. Whereas
Wiggins Andrew played more.
Yeah.
But Embiid, if you go by the analytics and the per minute statistics, out of this world, a much better defender, and then was so new to the game. And they just, they had Wiggins in practice, and then they would just say, then Embiid would do something that would make you go oh my God, look at this guy. So they had these two huge draft prospects. And by the end of the season, I think it was safe to say that most people felt that Joel Embiid could be a prospect that you would take number one in the draft.
Yeah. And even though Joel got off obviously to a slow start in his career with his injuries, obviously no signs of that now.
It's the thing where you have this guy who could potentially lead a team to Joel Embiid in his first two full healthy-ish seasons has led the team to the second round both years.
Yeah.
Been very impressive there. And Andrew Wiggins, it's been tough to see his translation as far as creating a winning team and being part of a winning team, even being a second or third guy on a winning team. We'll see how he does as a fourth guy in Golden State.
Well, I think that's where the rest of his career kind of projects is he's this, he's
his
chance of being the guy is gone. And it's, he's going to just have to fill a, specific role, as a second, third. And then obviously in the case of a, Golden State team that might, get a first pick in the draft this year, fourth, fifth kind of guy, maybe an off the bench energy.
Yeah, that could be where he's tracking. With the money he's making right now, he was lucky because in his third season, he looked pretty promising.
Well, that is his career
high. He signs the huge contract.
Yeah, 23.5 points a game, you know.
Yeah. And improved efficiency. That was a big thing. Like, that season, he actually, you know, shot at least – he was, I think, 35.6% from three. So he at least shot, like, average. And since then and before that, he wasn't really around there. His free throw percentage has fluctuated, but his jump shooting and everything like that has been really low when you look at as far as efficiency. This year, the one thing that he really improved on was as a passer. So he at least had that kind of going for him, and he was getting better there. That was another issue people had with Andrew Wiggins, is his kind of tunnel vision. But if he can shoot, like, he's consistency has always been the big thing with him.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been there as far as his shooting, as far as bringing it every night. He'll have these flash games, flash plays, where you see what people were kind of looking at when they saw him as this big time prospect because of his combination of size and athleticism and lateral quickness. But basketball awareness has been one of the big holdbacks with him.
Yeah, I think maybe to that, it's like, it's killer instinct. You know, like, yeah, that kind of, like.
Yeah, I think that was always a concern with him as well.
Yeah.
If he was just kind of, you know, to go with the flow.
Yeah, and then he's also, you know, he's had his outs with Canada basketball, so he hasn't really played on the national team there for a while either, kind of as a side thing. It's just, he's had an interesting career that I think we're going to look at as it's good. You know, it's a very solid career. I mean, he has that Rookie of the Year award, but it's never going to be, like, great.
No. And yeah, he, right now, role player. And then I think there's a drop off between 8 and 7, as we'll see.
Yeah. I think like, this is like another kind of tier, you know, like Markel too. Like, I mean, he has a chance to become that a role player as well. Wiggins, you know, he's kind of on,
I feel like Markel's like pretty much there.
Yeah. And then Wiggins is going to probably slip, and, you know, it looks like his minutes are dipping kind of every year. So obviously scoring, everything kind of goes along.
Well, with he's playing for Thibodeau, so of course they are.
obviously a little bit there, but even on Golden State, you know, he's getting 19.4, and this is like a Golden State team right now where it's like kind of
everyone. Oh yeah, there were
rain. There's no Steph, no Clay. And so yeah, it's interesting to see, but then yeah, we're gonna move up to this next player, and this is like this kind of next year, and everyone from here on out is like,
yeah, 70% of them are. We feel all-star level talents, and yeah, because we're going a little different here. Some people may have this guy ahead of the guy we have six, but I'm going for upside. I still feel like the guy we have six has upside. The guy we have seven is John Wall, who's been a five-time all-star, has had a good NBA career.
Oh, great career. Like,
yeah, he may not be exactly what people expected, but he's still been very good.
I mean, you look at the
career, yeah.
You know, today it's like 19 points a game career, scoring 9.2 assists per game. I mean, that's really, really good.
Yeah.
You know, he's led, you know, he's kind of built this backcourt. You know, he and Bradley Beal, you know, kind of defined this, what this current Washington team is. Five-time All-Star. He made an All-NBA third team 2017. He's made an All-Defensive team. He's a really good player. And I remember the first time, I don't know what recruiting website I was looking at the time, but, you know, as a University of Oregon basketball fan, they mentioned this kid, John Wall. He had an offer from Oregon. Obviously, you know, in your dreams, you're like, oh,
yeah, no chance.
Yeah, no chance. But it was just fun to watch his mixtape because I just saw this kid and I was like, bounce. Like, he just had that extra gear.
So fast with
that.
And it had like great size also. So
like, yeah, like he was a bigger,
more like 6'8", 6'9" wingspan. He was so fast with the ball. You just saw this enormous upside there. And he first commits to Memphis while John Calipari is the coach there. John Calipari goes to Kentucky. John Wall is heading there.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Which tells you something about the player. When they're a Calipari guy, it's like,
yeah,
that's usually a pretty good endorsement.
And then, as far as the guy that many people compared him to, but felt he possibly had even more potential, was Derrick Rose. Yeah. And if you compare their freshman year, like John Wall possibly looked even better as a freshman than Derrick Rose. It, granted, I think John Wall might have been a little bit older than Derrick Rose as a freshman, but still, they both really stood out because of how explosive they were, how quick they were. And the thing that John Wall had over Derrick Rose was I think he saw the floor better and was a better playmaker. He might not have been like as explosive, just, you know, like off of one foot, but he was still like, you just saw this enormous potential there. And as far as coming into the league, like he, I don't know if he finished runner up in rookie of the year, but like that was the year Blake Griffin, he and Blake Griffin both were considered rookies because Blake Griffin had sat out his
year. You have two number one picks also in the same year, which is normal.
John Wall comes into the NBA and is immediately like at least pretty good. And then I think just kind of gets better from there. Signs an enormous contract that's like, I think a couple seasons ago. And then he gets hurt last season. Doesn't play this entire season. You just kind of wonder where it's going to go from here for John Wall.
Yeah, it's tough because
you assume he comes back and he's still going to be good. But yeah, he was an all-star 5 years in a row.
Yeah.
And like, it seems like you know what you're getting out of him. You're getting penetration, you're getting kickouts, you're getting this guy who can have these huge games night in, night out, and has been one of the NBA's top assist leaders like pretty much every season since he's been in the league.
Yeah, his career low for a season, 2012-13, he had 7.6 assists a game.
Yeah.
And you look at his playoff, you know,
he's your initiator.
Like, yeah, he's a dude. You see this number both years he was in the playoffs, he was scoring more than he was during the regular, you know, like,
yeah,
it's great. It's hard to know, you know, what the rest of the career for John Wall does hold, because, you know, five-time All-Star, but again, two injuries, you know, basically three injury seasons because he didn't play this year. And it's hard when those guys that have that extra gear lose it, you know, like that speed is such a big part of who they are as a player, what their game is.
And the other thing with John Wall is he's never been a very consistent outside shooter.
No, and which hurts him, you know, if he, you know, as he transitions from not being the fastest player on the court.
Yeah.
When you're not
definitely the shooting really hurts. Yeah, that's a thing you notice with all of our first four players that we've mentioned.
Yeah.
Shooting is an issue.
And the way the league is today, it's like you need to have it. Like, it just
– it would put him on a whole different plane, for sure.
Yeah. It's kind of a non-negotiable. But, yeah, if John
Wall – even, like, you know, 35% on a consistent basis from three.
Yeah, if you were to never play another game in the NBA again, you know, due to injury, great, awesome career.
Oh, good, yeah.
Yeah, sure. I just – you know, I think everyone we have ahead of him just has that extra level of potential for accolade that I think John Wall's kind of reached that peak now. We kind of – see, and it's going to be hard to see how he projects into a different role than being the fastest player on the court.
Yeah.
You know, go-to point guard.
John Wall was actually the 1 year I missed the Hoop Summit. And I know the USA lost the game. I heard he played very well. I think I saw tape of it. And, yeah, like, obviously John Wall was one of the standouts on that team. Was a pretty obvious first pick. Some people talked about Evan Turner, but as we see, like, John Wall
was the
– it seemed like he was the far and away favorite for number one pick that year. The guy who looks like the best player from that draft is Paul George. And Paul George went, I believe, 10. And, Paul George, it was – there were a number of wing guys, like, in that, like – kind of second half of the lottery who ended up being very good players. And Paul George looks like, in retrospect, probably would have been the number one player, you know, in a redraft.
Guys that go, like, again, John Wall went to Kentucky, you know, the A program with, you know, the A coach of Calipari, you know, versus, you know, Paul George coming from Fresno State, you know, not as much, you know, hype surrounding it, but again, great career from John Wall. But yeah, I think we're kind of, he's reached, you know, he's at his peak. And then I think, yeah, everyone we have ahead of him is, you're just
gonna see.
Probably just has this next level of potential that they can take on from him. So moving on from John Wall, now we're getting into this place where we're really going to see, you know, some guys that we are going to be projecting.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, so this is, you know, going to come for some debate. You know, if you got any, you know, opinions or feelings, definitely leave them in the comments or send us an email, viselandpod@gmail.com. Yeah. But this next guy that we have is still very young in the league, but, you know, bright future in a position that's not the, you know, the most important position in the, you know, for a team anymore necessarily. And that is a center. And that is going to be DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah. And like everybody on the list up to this point, huge questions about whether he should have been the number one pick in retrospect, especially after that first year, you just kind of saw, and a lot of draft Twitter saw this as a two-player, like two players being head and shoulders above the rest of the class. DeAndre Ayton wasn't necessarily among those two players. So you had Luka Doncic and Jaren Jackson Jr. seen as the best two prospects by much of draft Twitter. DeAndre Ayton kind of being the more mainstream player, just due to his insane physical gifts.
Yo,
the guy just looks the absolutely looks the part. JV, you actually got to see him as a high school player as well.
At the Take Flight Challenge, the Jordan Brand rented a hangar in Santa Monica, California. We went down, we got to see, you know, a bunch of great players, and he was just he's the center.
He was still raw. He was still really raw.
You know, just big physically. You saw him, you're like, this is an NBA wow. center.
Yeah. Like, he just, like, you know how, like, at least in looks and everything, like, the two most physically impressive players as high schoolers that I saw in the Hoop Summit, you got Joel Embiid, who just had this amazing body to go along with athleticism. So that I should paraphrase it with that, like having athleticism and that body. And so you have Joel Embiid and then DeAndre Ayton, like physically very much in that build, doesn't necessarily have, he was also like maybe a little bit later to the game. The other legend of DeAndre Ayton is he's from Bahamas and he plays this, I think he was like a rising junior and plays in this exhibition game against North Carolina, like University of North Carolina. This guy is still in high school. I think he just had turned 17. And he gets like a double-double and his team beats North Carolina in this exhibition. And like, this is a team that was competing for NCAA championships, like year in, year out. And they have a number of impressive big guys on their roster. And DeAndre Ayton also goes to the Hoop Summit as a high school junior. One adorable thing I remember is his mother was there, and I think it must have been a little sister. And I just remember him walking out and reaching down and holding this little girl's hand. And I remember like just being like, that it was a, kind of a heart melting moment. And, you know, this gentle giant. Unfortunately for him that year, maybe the worst world team that I have seen since I've been at the Hoop Summit, going up against what I felt was, at least as high school players, the best USA team. I don't think he had the best time during that week. He has an okay game, and he doesn't come back that next year. There are lots of questions also going around. He was considered the number one player in his class for most of high school. And then Michael Porter Jr. looks so damn good. Marvin Bagley reclassifies as well. And he was very highly thought of as a high school prospect also. Get to college. One recruiting service actually ends the year with Michael Porter Jr. as number one. Goes back and says, we don't think that's necessarily the case. We're moving DeAndre Ayton back to number one. We just think there's too much upside there. And he goes to Arizona and he looks very, very good. And, you know, he just has all these flashes. He's a guy who, like, any night can put up 20 and 10, like, easy.
Well, I say for him, he's kind of like, you look at his stats too. He's like a, throw, you know, he's like true center. You know, he's made no three-pointers in his 2 years in the NBA so far. And he doesn't need to impact the game. He's, you know, he's 19 right now. He's 19 points a game, 12 rebounds a game. This current 2019-20.
His counting stats are super impressive.
Yeah.
The major thing with him, the concern why people didn't necessarily feel he was deserving of being the top prospect, he doesn't really create for himself, which, you know, a number of centers don't. He always has, his shot has always looked good, but he doesn't like take any three pointers or anything like that. And nowadays you would like it optimally if your big man stretch the floor, which is why they like Jaren Jackson. Jaren Jackson also a much better team defender and rim protector, or at least, you know, that's what the projection was. Just much better defensive awareness. There were times where DeAndre Ayton wouldn't even challenge shots. There was actually a hilarious interview, I believe he did with Ricky O'Donnell, where he just said, I don't really challenge shots. Like, he was so candid. and even when he was coming into Arizona, and they had lost in the tournament, he goes like, oh yeah, Alonzo Chura shot too much. Like, something like along those lines. He's a hilarious interview. And
you know, but again, I think he's a center in the, you know, he's going to be a starting center in the NBA for a long time. That means he's going to be getting his points. He's going to be getting his rebounds. Like, I know they don't have the center in the All-Star game as a position anymore. It's kind of like this front court, back court, but I definitely think he starts getting into All-Star games.
Yeah, that's the ultimate hope. But it seems like this year he took strides as a defender. You just are hoping maybe he can possibly stretch out to the three-point line. That would be great. He still hasn't been a very consistent shooter. And the other thing that's really stood out about him in a negative way is he's had a really tough time getting to the free throw line. He can shoot free throws. That's the amazing thing with him. Like, he's a good free throw shooter,
but he
gets to the line at an incredibly low rate for a big man. And you just hope to, for a guy who's that impressive physically, who has that kind of touch, you would hope that he would be better attacking around the basket and at least getting in those situations where he gets to the free throw line a bit more than he has.
No, totally. But I mean, definitely bright potential future for, you know, young center. And, you know, like, every team needs to start a center. There aren't that many centers out there that are great, right, you know, right now. It's kind of an underserved position, and like, at least in my opinion. So I think, you know, the future can be bright for him. But yeah, like, it'd be great if he could stretch, because, you know, it's great to have 4 to 5, but everyone wants to have 5 players now that can shoot it. So, but, you know, as long as he's there to get the rebounds, defense obviously needs to improve a little bit. This year, he upped it to 1.7 blocks per game. Over his rookie year, he was under a block a game. So that's...
Yeah, exactly. It seems like he's at least on the right track there. And, you just hope that there's nowhere to go but up for him. He's still... Obviously, Luka Doncic, like, should have been the number one pick. It seems pretty obvious at this point. Luka Doncic is that player who, going forward, you see winning multiple MVPs, being even in the, at least, like, possibly first-team All-NBA conversations this year.
Yeah, oh, totally.
He's making an All-Star team. Jaren Jackson Jr. potentially could be above Ayton as well. Trae Young. There are some players in this draft who, it was a really good draft. And Ayton still goes pretty high in this draft. Like, there's a lot to like there. Like, he shoots, like, a really good percentage from the field as well. There are definitely things to like there with Ayton, and he's strong. I think the suspension definitely hindered. It seemed like he was off to a pretty positive start, and the suspension really hindered that as well. I guess for some performance-enhancing drug or something along those lines. And you just hope that that next year he just keeps improving. And there was just so much to like about him as a prospect, and certainly like a talent where I feel he can be a multiple time All-Star and then potentially really affect winning as well, if he can become, you know, one of the best centers in the league, which it seems like he at least has a chance to be that. Like right now, without the requisite awareness, like just what he's doing is pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, that's why, you know, still, you know, 21 years old, doing what he's doing right now, like it definitely has some bright potential for him. You know, that, like, if, you know, Phoenix can, you know, kind of get this core together, you know, Devin Booker, kind of keep some, you know, something, and, you know, build a playoff contending team. Like, I mean, that would be a pretty solid career, you know, if he could keep, you know, 20-10 on a good playoff team, pop into some All-Star games.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping. So let's move on, and we are in the top five. And this number five guy, I'd say possibly even another tier here, he's a really good player. And there were questions as far as, you know, these, I'd say like even 3 to 5, like all very, very good players. This is Ben Simmons. I have Ben Simmons number five. And it may be low. He's super talented. He's become a fantastic defender as well and very versatile there. One of the best passers in the league.
Oh, totally. Like, and for a guy his size.
Yeah. Oh, like freakish athleticism and his ability to handle the ball, everything there. As a high school player, was able to see him a few times as well. Was at the 2015 Nike Hoop Summit. And he came in a little bit late, I remember. And I left there still having him number one in the class. It was that combination of all those things that we mentioned, the ability to see the floor. Like a guy who's like a 6'10 point guard.
Yeah.
And with like fantastic athleticism as well. You kind of saw him as ambidextrous because he was so dominant with his right hand around the basket, but shot with his left hand. You could immediately see that there could be shooting issues with him. That was the one thing. Like usually you notice for the world team in the Hoop Summit, and Ben Simmons being from Australia, he was on the world team. They shoot a lot in practices, and the world team has amazing practices. Ben Simmons, they're playing this shooting game where they're trying to go around the world, and you hit two shots to go around the world. And he's with Scalabissier and Thonmaker, and Scal and Thon hitting shots a lot more frequently than Ben. Ben, I don't know if he ever got past like the top of the key. Like that, it wasn't necessarily pretty there. And the thing was, at least from what I hear, like when he was doing youth levels, like it looked like the shooting was possibly a thing. I just think it was so easy for him to finish around the basket, and he had that ability to blow by defenders. That's something he still is very good at doing. But yeah, the shooting gives him like a whole new level as far as like potentially becoming that franchise player, I would say.
Oh, totally. When you look at him, I mean, in the open court handling the ball, it's like Magic, LeBron. You know, it's like there's very few guys that are at that size that are that skilled at handling, distributing. But yeah, the shooting is what's going to hinder him a little bit. You know, this was the first year. Sure. Yeah, this is the first year of 2019, 2020 that he's made a three-pointer. You know, like, or
all documented. We all rejoiced.
Yeah. And
Ben Simmons finally made a three-pointer.
It was a Twitter.
He doesn't take shots. Like, yeah. That's a big thing with him. You can play so far off of him. And yes, he can kill in so many ways and spread the floor in other ways because he is a tremendous passer and has that ability to penetrate. But as you've seen, like, the past 2 years in the playoffs, he's become much less of a factor because teams are able to play off of him so much, and they just kind of figure it out. And I think that's kind of killed his individual offense and made him a less effective player once the 76ers have got to the second round, or even in general. Like, yeah, when you're a guy who has the type of regular season that Ben Simmons has and then goes down that notch in the playoffs, like that, a legitimate concern.
Well, because that's the thing with the playoffs. I mean, the game slows down. Possessions are tighter. And, like, when you can't hit shots or be a reliable score, and especially him kind of hanging outside, it does hurt. But I think, you know, projecting, he's at this point in his career right now where he's made back-to-back All-Star teams. It doesn't look like he's not going to. Like, Philadelphia is going to be a competitive team, you know, if they keep, you know, keep he and Embiid in this core together for quite a while. And I think, I mean, if he keeps this up as far as being this, you know, big, fast distributor, he's going to have a, you know, end up with a great career line.
And I still feel like there's more to build in Philadelphia. I just don't understand why people now, like, this is his technically fourth year in the league, but his third year. Fifth year in the league, right? Or no.
No,
it's fourth year in the league.
Fourth year in the league, playing year. Because he
third playing year. Yeah, exactly. He wins rookie of the year, contested, but it was Ben Simmons. Yeah.
He has a trophy hanging in his house. You can't take
exactly. it. I just feel like people were so quick, and maybe Philadelphia pulled the trigger a bit too soon. People forget how ridiculously close last year they were to beating the Raptors. Like, that's one thing where they were like, that was a game seven. You thought it was going to overtime, and Kawhi makes this amazing shot. You wonder what the hell Ben Simmons is doing on that last defensive possession.
But it was a once in a lifetime shot from Kawhi, you know, with the rim action. Yeah.
I feel like Kawhi, but the level of shooter Kawhi's become, it may be a more regular occurrence. But yeah, certainly it was dramatic in the rim action.
Yeah.
And yeah, the picture, amazing, incredible playoff moment. But yeah, I still feel like there's more time and there's more team building. The salary cap situation is going to be really tough. You're not sure they surrounded him with the right pieces. You want Ben Simmons to be surrounded by shooters. Like, yeah. You know how when LeBron was at his best in Miami and even on Cleveland, you just surrounded him with shooters. You made sure there were guys that he could kick out to. And you want people opening those lanes and stretching the floor. And Philadelphia hasn't necessarily done the best job yet of putting those guys around Ben Simmons. But he and Joel Embiid they're still young enough where I know a lot of people are saying eventually you'll have to trade one or the other to get the best out of them. I still think there's time to give it a shot. Like, you know, I hope they give it a few more years because they're two such unique players who have defensive ability. Ben Simmons, very unique as far as his ability to create offense for others.
When you give up these guys, a lot of the time, you never get the equal return. You know, like, you know, you let go of Ben Simmons.
Oh, it'd have to be the right move.
Yeah, but even then,
I'm not sure that would happen.
Yeah, when you think it's the right move or it seems good or you're getting, you know, a high draft pick or whatever for this guy, they can, you know, like Ben Simmons could go do something else with another team where if, you know, he is surrounded with those shooters, you know, you're kicking yourself or you trade Joel. Like, it never fully works out. And I think, yeah, you should. You know, unless the guys truly hate each other, which it doesn't seem like they do, but, you know, like, unless there's some sort of animosity there and you can't, you know, get that chemistry on the court, you can disband. But, you know, if things are working, like, yeah, give it a shot. And try to bring in, you know, those veteran guys on the cheap that are, like, fill those roles of being, like, spot shooters to kind of make up for some of, you know, Ben Simmons' weakness and then his strength to penetrate, you know, bring in the defense, get that, kick it out to that guy that can hit those shots.
Yeah. And I still think Ben Simmons' best is ahead of him.
Yeah.
We'll see if he could be like the second guy on a championship team. Like there still is that possibility and he still could rise even more. We're not sure. Especially with the lack of shooting which I think unlocks a whole different aspect when he actually chooses to shoot every once in a while when it's given to him.
Yeah, well, I think right now it's going to be tough too because, again, I think the way the NBA is doing it with the, you know, finishing this season off, running into the next season, it doesn't give them that off season, and that's where those guys can, like, work out with their trainers and, like, build that different, you know, asset onto their game. He's only going to really have a month, you know, to really put in that.
You don't know what he's been doing this entire time. Like that.
Oh, totally. I'd love to see it come back, but it's – Odds are a little less.
Yeah. Like, do I expect Ben Simmons to come back and shoot? No. But I there's certainly a possibility he was working on it and, like, working this entire time. I'm just interested to see how many guys come back and have been working and kind of expecting it to happen. Like, I'm guessing most players didn't just, you know, sit down and chill like this entire time.
Well, that's why it's interesting.
You can't expect the season to be back.
You can kind of get a little bit of a redo on your season because it gives you an off season in the middle of the season. You know,
exactly.
Like, yeah, well, you can add that, you know, extra thing, like go review your tapes and see like what can I do. But yeah, if you know, it's going to be tough, you know, on these two seasons if that hasn't really been put into play, because he's not going to have another off season really to pick that up. But yeah, I think like he still projects as he's going to be a great player, because again, he has that
already really good player,
super rare ability of just being a big guy that can just run the court. Like you can't stop, you know, a train that's coming down the court like that. Like it's very difficult. So big projection from him. But moving on to next on the list. Now we're getting to the nitty gritty. This is the final of, you know, the highest ranked of Cleveland, who dominated the decade at the top of the draft there with 3 first round picks in this decade.
Yeah.
We're talking about Uncle Drew himself, Kyrie Irving.
Yes, indeed. And it's Ben Simmons and Kyrie, a discussion, but right now Kyrie is just so damn good. he's already had like a career that I feel, well, he hasn't been necessarily the most durable player. He had some excellent years, and you know, the 3 NBA finals that he's been to, and then in 2016 he had some moments that were just absolutely jaw-dropping. His game 5 I thought was a masterpiece. He was 17 of 24, I believe, from the field, and each one of those field goals was like absolutely like out of this world. And
just his handles too.
Yeah. Like,
he just has
best ball handler in the league.
Yeah, like it's just he's really like set himself as like one of the elite point guards of this generation.
For sure. It's hard to say that he hasn't lived up to what everybody expected from him. He's been a complete offensive force. And then even defensively, he has instincts. He's not the best there, but he goes to Boston, and granted, you know, it was for Isaiah Thomas, but they improve defensively once he gets to Boston. The big thing with him is you kind of wonder how conducive he is to winning, like just as the main player. But
which we're still probably not going to get
in Brooklyn, like how that will work with he and Kevin Durant, because it certainly worked with LeBron once they got to that playoffs, and you know, you could just run the offense through those two players. And the thing with Kyrie too is he's an excellent shooter, so yeah. He's at 39% for his career, and there are just times where he's an absolute bucket from deep.
Oh, yeah, you got to
amazing off the bounce, of course, and the thing with playing with LeBron, like anytime you have Kyrie Irving, it's going to be a lot of pick and rolls. It's going to be a lot of isolation. But with LeBron, the fact that you could kick to Kyrie, his ability to create, he's not necessarily known as like the best passer, but he's still, I think, very high level there as well. When he was at Duke, yes, his college career was very short.
Very short, yeah.
He had the injury that kept him out for a majority of that season. But I felt in the few games that he did play, he looked phenomenal.
But that's the kind of player he was, where he can miss the whole season, have that kind of injury red flag at the time, and be the number one pick. He was worthy of that. Great shooter. Yeah, and I think the way his, you know, the he's 28, so he's at this kind of point in his career, but it's like, he gets to go to the only true team in New York right now, sadly, which is Brooklyn. Take that, Knicks fans. And he and Kevin Durant get to team up, and it'll be interesting to see what they put together, because that Brooklyn team, you know, like has some pieces.
Yeah, and as we saw when Kyrie was playing this year, like he still had some moments where you're just dropped your jaw. He was getting buckets in the. As you would say in Uncle Drew, like the important thing is getting buckets.
Yeah, no.
And Kyrie, really good at doing that. Going on with what he did in college, I just felt like he had so many translatable skills to the NBA. He wasn't necessarily considered the number one player coming out of high school, I think Harrison Barnes and Jared Sullinger were probably ranked ahead of him. I remember at the Nike Hoops Summit, I only went to the game, but like near the end of that game, it was very close. It went back and forth. Enes Kanter had this enormous game for the world team. I think they were down by 20. And then I think even like the USA may have been down by like double digits. They come back and win. And to me, the hero at the end of the game was Kyrie Irving. You put the ball in his hands and great things happen. So yeah, saw that and then saw him just as a college player and felt like he was by far the best player in that draft. The other player who was up for discussion as far as being the number one pick in the draft was Derek Williams. And there was discussion there.
No, I remember at the time, but yeah, now it's like, now we're lucky.
If you're going between those two players, the right move in retrospect, there was a player named Jimmy Butler who went later in that draft. You could go back and forth between he and Kyrie as players right now. People may prefer Jimmy. But the real guy who ends up, in retrospect, being the best player from this draft class is somebody who has been a two-time Finals MVP, Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard, you didn't necessarily see him becoming what he has become, becoming a player that you can build a championship team around. But, yeah, that was another player in this draft. He goes 15 to Indiana, gets traded to San Antonio for George Hill. The rest is history.
Yeah, I think he's done all right for himself. But yeah, Kyrie, you know, he's still got some years left with Brooklyn where I think, you know, that gives him some, you know, some deep playoff runs. But you already look at it. You know, he won that championship with LeBron, six-time All-Star. He's made, you know, All-NBA second team, 2019, All-NBA third team, 2015. Plus, like, what he and Kevin Durant can do, you know, if Kevin Durant can come back healthy, Kyrie, you know, can stay, you know, at a healthy place. Yeah, he's
level of scorers, man.
Like, yeah.
And I guess, you know, Kyrie hasn't necessarily gotten along with everybody. It seems like he and KD get along. So that's the ultimate hope there, is if you have those two talents, they get along, Brooklyn could look really, really good next year. They were already a playoff team even without them.
Before getting those guys, And so it gives them another chance to really make those deep June playoff runs, you know, to elevate his status, you know, for his career. But I think, you know, he's already had an amazing career with the potential to have a few more years of, you know, high level productivity. And and the man turned a Pepsi commercial into a movie. So there's a lot of things he can do when he really puts his mind to it and is given
the man complains about, being in the spotlight. Well, he and Kevin Durant have that in common.
And I gotta say, if we're gonna rank the movies, I would take Uncle Drew over Thunderstruck any day.
Oh, I think if you have to watch either of them, then you're probably having a bad time. But
I mean, I wouldn't say it was at my best when I watched Uncle Drew, but it was a thing that it was done in my home.
It's fun for the kids, but we're also in our 30s. So.
Yeah, we're also in our 30s, and my son wasn't born at that time yet. So, yeah.
Are you going to be showing Drew Uncle Drew?
I did name my son. That is my son's name, but it was not named after Uncle Drew, luckily.
I'm pretty sure it was.
It might have been.
Pretty sure it was.
It might have been. My goal is to really have enough kids to fill up the
room. By the way, Kyrie Irving shirt, just for people who are watching on YouTube.
And his sneaker line he's the only one, I think, on our whole list that really has a good sneaker line. So, you know, shout out to him there. But now we are moving in to our top three.
Yes.
We got it.
So this was another tough one between three and four, especially since this player is somebody that I'm projecting to hopefully do a lot more winning in the future. Has not had a lot of experience with that so far. It's been tough in Minnesota. Kevin Garnett went through a lot of the same things, but Karl Anthony Towns, I think, has been a very, very good NBA player, was a very good college player, had the luxury of not having to play huge minutes in college on a tremendous team that unfortunately lost before the finals in the NCAA tournament. But yeah, Karl Anthony Towns is our number three player. Played for Kentucky. He had played for John Calipari for the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, because you know, Calipari knows how to recruit when he sees a guy from a country like Dominican Republic, and then it's like, hey, I'm going to coach their national team, so I get the 16-year-old kid.
Yeah, it was
coach him up before he comes in place for me.
Yeah, he was playing the long game, and it worked out.
It worked out very well for him, and it's worked out very well for Karl Anthony Towns because he's a phenomenal, phenomenal player.
For sure, for sure. And then, you know, I like the way that Cal used him. Karl Anthony Towns was always a player who was a pretty high-volume shooter, and Cal kind of made him get into the post. He didn't take a lot of shots at Kentucky. I really like that aspect about him and kind of getting him out of his comfort zone. And I think that might have actually helped as far as his future. But yeah, his statistics as a college player don't necessarily pop off, but that was because of the amount of minutes he was playing. And then when you look at things like box plus minus, and you saw he was very, very high level in college. He had some fantastic games near the end of his time at Kentucky as well. I remember a game against Notre Dame where he was like unstoppable.
He was also a known entity, you know, going into his draft. So it was like,
and, you know, like 7-footer, seven, like five or so wingspan. I had the chance to see him play at two Nike Hoop Summits. He played as a junior and senior. I think he had reclassified at that point. I'm not quite sure. But yeah, he had played those last 2 years of high school at the Hoop Summit. I got to interview him as a senior, and I still tell people this. He was a tremendous interview and like was just so humble, gracious, eye contact, like just a great guy. And that's what I had heard from everybody else. It was funny because I had heard from some people before I saw him in that first Hoop Summit in 2013 that he, and this is something that I think is kind of standard for a lot of players. He complained about calls, you know, he had like an attitude. I show up at the Hoop Summit. This guy is the youngest guy on the team. He's a leader. His attitude was fantastic. He's teaching Joel Embiid, who's a couple years older than him, some things. And that stood out to scouts immediately as well. He wasn't necessarily considered he was like a top 10 guy. He wasn't considered the number one guy. And even going into his into Kentucky, he wasn't necessarily considered the number one player in that class. Jahlil Okafor had a better Hoop Summit game. And a lot of people still had Jahlil number one going into that season. And then as the season progressed, you saw the shooting potential with Towns, and just defensively a whole different level than Jahlil too.
Yeah, right now you look at, and now he's, you know, he and Wiggins kind of had some tension and maybe, you know, even a little, was it he and Jimmy Butler or was it Wiggins and Jimmy Butler?
I would say it was more Wiggins and Towns against Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
I'm guessing, so... The one cool thing is there's a video from that 2013 Hoop Summit. The world team was amazing. And you had Karl Anthony Towns, Joel Embiid, Andrew Wiggins, Dante Exum, Dennis Schroeder, Sergei Karasev, and Livio John Charles. And so amazing team. Kat and Andrew Wiggins room together and get along really well. So back-to-back number one picks in 2014, 2015. And there's a video of them shooting from, I think it was like somewhere around like 30 feet out. And I may be a little hyperbolic, but not by much. They're shooting 30 feet out and they are making back to back to back. Like it goes on for like a number of rounds. And I'm actually in the background of that video. So it's really cool, like seeing me there. And I point to my friend, Chris Habas. Shout out Chris Habas. I think it was NBA draft room, but he was a great guy. And we're talking there. And then like, I'm just like, look over there. Like these guys are just nailing these long bombs. And
well, when it comes to hoops,
ends up winning.
When it comes to Hoop Summit footage, I always encourage my friends to always look out for my brother. He actually, he made it to Business Insider as well. They were showing Emmanuel Mudiay, and you're like standing like right behind him. I like highlighted.
How's that next year?
Yeah. So you know, Hoop Summit's got some great things for everyone. But if we're looking at Karl Anthony Towns and like projecting him a little bit forward too, it's like,
yeah,
this year it's like 26.5 points a game, 10 plus rebounds. Awesome. You know, he shoots the three pretty well. It's his team now. Like, no questions asked. Like, he's the guy. So, you know, yeah. I think
if you go by rookie year, like after his rookie year, people were super high on him. And I remember a few people at Hoop Summit who just felt like if you're pairing them by age and everything with he and even Anthony Davis, they felt like he was further ahead as a rookie than Anthony Davis was, especially since you could tell, like watching him shoot in practice, where I'm talking about Ben Simmons missing shots, Karl Anthony Towns not missing a lot of shots. The shot looked good. And, you know, always had the high free throw percentage. He had touch. And he has these enormous hands, enormous feet. But, yeah, he had a number of ways to score. And I just think there's more to go there. I think that there are going to be many years where he's a top center in the NBA. And then you wonder what he's going to do as far as his second contract.
Yeah. And what does that bring to him? But I mean,
maybe looking somewhere else. If Minnesota is able to build a little bit, you know, let's say they add somebody from this draft who can help. Not necessarily a sure thing, but yeah, you certainly hope that he can build something in Minnesota. It's been tough so far.
No, Minnesota. Yeah. Well, that's kind of been their unfortunate reputation as a team of like, they did it with Kevin Garnett. You know, they have this great player and then they don't really have anything to do with that. You know, like they can't put them over that hump. So we'll see. But I mean, I think Karl Anthony Towns, like, he's great and he keeps projecting on this trajectory, which it looks like he is, you know, 25-ish points a game, 10 plus rebounds a game. That makes you the best center in the league. Like,
the wins are the thing that'll make him the best center in the league, I feel. And right now, you know, you can argue Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic.
Yeah, Jokic.
But yeah, Karl Anthony Towns certainly, like, are around there. And if you consider the next player, I feel you consider a center as well. And, I still feel like this next player is ahead of Karl Anthony Towns. But, yeah, the other thing with Kat is, like, still – not even 25 years old yet.
Yeah, 24. So, yeah,
the fact that he's done what he's done up to this point, granted, you know, like it's more based off of statistics than wins, but it's still like you can tell that he's a guy that you can build a team around. And if he gets like this, like when he had a high-level creator like Jimmy Butler, they looked like a good team. Like they looked like they were going places, and it's too bad that it didn't work out. You certainly hope that he gets that. I don't think it's necessarily there in D'Angelo Russell, but it's about building pieces in Minnesota, and you know, still I guess have to give them time because Andrew Wiggins was never really going to be that second guy for them.
Yeah, with Karl Anthony Towns. Yeah, don't totally. And then moving on to our number two, this is the highest rank of the three John Calipari college coach guys.
Yeah.
He's not a coach of those number ones. We had Wall. We just talked about Cat. We're talking about the unibrow himself, Anthony Davis.
And yeah, let's just say it. I feel this is kind of controversial to have Anthony Davis number two. He's been so, so good. And like, certainly he's, I don't know if you, he'll get some MVP votes. I think he at least gets some MVP votes, some Defensive Player of the Year votes. This past season, he's had MVP shares and MVP votes before. He's been, I feel like, lived up to what his billing and more. And he hasn't gotten incredibly far in the playoffs as of yet. But this year.
Yeah, did this thing in the offseason where he got himself on the Lakers.
Yeah.
With that blockbuster trade. And now he's
as soon as he signed with Clutch, you kind of saw it coming. But yeah, finally got done, and lo and behold, when you put two of like the most efficient players,
yeah, he and LeBron together,
you get a pretty good team if you build some shooting and a little more defense around them. So yeah.
And the thing about Anthony Davis, and this is, I mean, since was so dominant at Kentucky, shot blocking, great shot blocker, because he's one of those guys that you look at him too, and it's like he was a guard. You know, didn't have a lot of offers.
And then late bloomer as far as his growth spurt.
Yeah, growth spurt. And, you know, it's like he takes those skills that he had when he was like 6'1", 6'2", still has them when he's 6'10".
Yeah. Oh, he's another guy who I remember looking on Scout and seeing this guy who was rising up the rankings. But I think at one point he was like the 8th ranked power forward or center for Scout. And I look at him and he has Oregon on his list. And I'm just thinking to myself, I'm like, oh man, we could get this guy? Like, let's go. We can get this guy? But like, I'm into this guy who had this huge growth spurt, has these guard skills. He goes to the Nike Global Challenge and a few other events, and he skyrockets up those rankings.
Yeah.
By the end of high school, he was considered the number one guy. Like, you know, you could see that he was special. I went to that Hoop Summit game, and nobody stood out as much as he did. Bismack Biyombo has a triple-double. I don't care. Anthony Davis, you saw the way that he moved and ran the floor.
And just so
– the ball skills, so the rim protection. It's like Bismack Biyombo was a physical presence and was, like, young. I'm doing air quotes. But he didn't have the skill or the fluidity of a player like Anthony Davis.
Yeah, and just like, and then again at this point of his career, he's already a 7-time All-Star. He's made 3, you know, All-NBA first teams, all defensive first teams, led the league in blocks 3 times, and now he's paired with LeBron, so he gets this chance. You know, like, LeBron's still got a few more years in him as this elite, and with Anthony Davis, you know, in his prime time, it's like he can add a couple championships maybe.
Yeah, that's certainly the hope. And yeah, we'll see what happens this year, but really good to see him like be this good on a championship contending team. And the other thing is, he hasn't necessarily had the most playoff experience, but when he's played in the playoffs, looked really damn good.
Well, so we got to see the Lakers
are going to rely heavily on LeBron and Anthony Davis. And oh yeah, we did get to see him.
You just got to see him. The Blazers had a home court advantage, and then the Pelicans swept them. And I think Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday were big parts of that one.
Yeah, and oh for sure, and even I hate saying this, but Rajon Rondo played all right. Yeah, definitely not on the level of the aforementioned two players. But the guy who I think might be right after Anthony Davis in the 2012 draft, if you were to do a redraft, is Damian Lillard. And I still feel like there's enough separation between he and Anthony Davis. Dame is a guy who's an MVP candidate as well. But Anthony Davis, with his defense, I think that's the separation between he and Karl Anthony Towns. I went back and looked at his rookie season just to see like his synergy numbers and everything like that. And he struggled as a shooter. He's still not the best shooter. And it took him a while to even become comfortable to take a few 3-point attempts per game. But he stretched that out. He's gotten at least better from mid-range, and he at least takes 3-pointers. I think he's right around, like, you know, 33 or so percent. Yeah, 33.5%.
Yeah, during the last 2 years.
And, so you at least have that option with him. Shoots a good percentage from the free throw line, so you can't really do anything with him there. And just always that lob threat. Like, that was the thing with him. His arms went on forever. The amazing game where he blocked John Henson at the end of the game, and like that guy is so tall and long, and then you just have Davis coming in with that arm up.
That's why in college he was just such a, like,
yeah,
you don't see guys like that. Like, he just
he had a, a really bad offensive game in the NCAA finals. Like, I think he was like 1 for 10 from the field.
Yeah,
and still won the player of the tournament. Yeah. Because he was so good.
Impacted the game on so many levels.
Oh, yeah. He averaged, I think, 4.7 blocks per game at Kentucky. That team was so well constructed. They had basically like 6 guys who were NBA level guys.
Oh, totally. But then
you like high, like, you know, a bunch were first round draft picks.
But you pull Anthony Davis.
Gilchrist.
But you pull Anthony Davis from that team.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They're not
He was the one who made it.
Yeah.
Made them, like,
you could have like the, like some of those other guys.
They had 2 losses that year.
Yeah.
Like, the one against Indiana with the amazing Christian Watford shot, and then I think they had one in SEC play somewhere. I want to say Mississippi State. I could be off, but yeah, they were an amazing college team. But yeah, Anthony Davis made it go. He was absolutely dominant, and he comes to the NBA, looks really good as a rookie, just gets better from there, and still possibly has another level to go. And as I was talking with you, Jason, I feel like LeBron has like another couple good years left in him where he might be the best player on that team. But I think eventually it's going to shift it kind of has to.
Yeah.
And the big if he signs with them, which you feel he will.
But I think that's the thing that usually makes the Lakers great is that they have these transitional player, you know, like they had Shaq and Kobe. So Shaq leaves, you still have Kobe. You know, like they've done a lot of those kind of, you know, buildings of the franchise. So it's like you got LeBron, and then you're going to shift that to AD and bring in someone else. You know, like just keep passing on good, you know.
Yeah, they seem to get better pretty quickly.
Yeah, they're like the kind of like they're the one franchise that's
make these exponential jumps because they're such an attractive destination.
Yeah, it's like such freaking like get LeBron. But yeah, let's move on. Obviously, this is the topic was, you know, the 10 best number one picks of the 2010s we're projecting for the career. So obviously there are no honorable mentions because there's 10 players, there's 10 things. We're moving on to number one. And this is a controversial, you know, people might think AD, this guy, obviously we're basing this on projecting, obviously small sample size.
Very.
But based on what you're seeing, you gotta love it. It's Zion Williamson.
Yeah, I just feel he's special. Like, flat out. Anthony Davis was special, too. Like, very special prospect. Zion, since I've been evaluating the draft, and, you know, obviously I'm no professional. I've done this absolutely as an amateur. But I've watched a lot of basketball. And there just hasn't been anybody like Zion Williamson in the college basketball game to me. As a freshman, just in terms of like out of this world finishing ability, ball handling, passing, defense, just how hard he plays, his strength.
Well, it's like Charles Barkley meets LeBron. It's like all like there's all these guys you can.
He's move. Like a 6'6" Shaq.
Yeah,
like, that's what I see him as.
Yeah, it's crazy, and that's the thing for him is just like it is once in a generation. Like it is.
Yeah,
you don't see guys like this every year, like, you know, in recruiting, in the draft. It's just he's so special. He's got so much potential.
Yeah. And I feel like as like maybe as players like going forward, if you're projecting, you have Giannis, you have Luka, and then I think you have Zion Williamson.
Yeah.
So that's the other cool thing about this list is it may not even have like the 2 best guys on the list if you're projecting maybe like 5 years into the future. But Zion, I just feel on this list, he's only played 19 games in the NBA.
And, you know, that's not even the majority of the season. And I still think he'll get votes for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And I Morant. I think
it's tough because Ja had such a great rookie year as well and looks like a fantastic player in his own right. Certainly, I think, surpass expectations there. But Zion Williamson in 19 games. Yesterday when you were talking about the New Orleans Pelicans, we did a mock draft with the NBA Draft Junkies. Go to their YouTube channel and check that out.
No, they're great.
Listen to the NBA Draft Junkies podcast. Shout out to Raphael, James Barlow for having us on there. Really appreciate that. So you had the Pelicans.
Yeah.
I feel like Zion Williamson already is the guy in New Orleans. You were talking about Brandon Ingram, who was an all-star this year, very impressive player in his own right, and certainly seemed to hit his stride. I still feel like Zion Williamson's already the guy. I think New Orleans already feels that as well.
I think Zion's an untouchable guy. You can't trade him. Yeah. Whereas Brandon Ingram,
I think he's already their best player. To me, like, if he would have played a full season, I see him as making an all-star team.
No, I definitely think like rookie of the year would not be in question. And if people vote for him for rookie of the year this year, you know, based on small sample of play, I still would not think they're crazy.
Yeah. Well, obviously he makes New Orleans a better team.
Yeah.
And they have just the whole trade with Anthony Davis. It gave them a really intriguing young core. And that's a team who you just have to wear shades. You feel their future is so bright.
Yeah.
It's like we were talking about Anthony Davis with Kentucky, like it's because they have this player who could, possibly be this generational guy. So I didn't get to see him play in the Hoop Summit. He had injured his hand in the McDonald's All-American game. So he didn't play in that game. But I was lucky enough. That was the first year I went to USA Basketball October minicamp, and Zion was playing there. And people didn't really know what to do with him. Like, that's the thing. Like, he doesn't end up finishing as the consensus number one player in the class. That goes to RJ Barrett, his college teammate. And it takes some people a while. To me, after that Kentucky game, like their first game, I have to admit, I didn't really watch the Canada tournament that they had played before the season, where he and RJ did really well and many people felt like Zion was the best player. But I watched that Kentucky game and he just jumps completely off the screen. Like, in terms of his efficiency, his ability to finish around the rim, there wasn't really anything that RJ did that was like incredibly better than what Zion produced.
Yeah, so it's that special, and he's, you know, working on his shot. He's not like, you know, he's not the greatest shooter in the world at this moment, but he's pretty good. You know, he's good enough.
Yeah. I think he's also like the strongest player in the league already.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy.
Like, well, they list him at six,
not even 20.
Yeah. They list him at 6'6", 285.
Yeah.
That is like a, you know, for a lot of college football teams, you know, that's like a tackle.
Yeah. Like, well, the dream would be to see him possibly play football as well. Yeah,
tight end on the football.
You would absolutely. I think a defensive end. Like, yeah. Who's stopping this guy?
Yeah.
Because he has the lateral ability and like his athleticism is otherworldly because of more than just his vertical ability, which is like absolutely absurd from like. His ability to jump without a running start and still get as high as he does. And then once he gets that running start. So yeah, the thing you saw in USA Basketball, he was like absurdly explosive. He had those ball skills. If a big switched onto him, they were absolutely dead. Like there was just no chance. He would blow right by them. A play that I just remember so fondly, it just like my eyes were popping out of my head. The scrimmage was tied. This guy named Jair Davis goes down the lane and Zion obliterates his shot off of the backboard on an attempted layup, runs the floor, gets a pass in transition, and tomahawk dunks it to give his team the eventual win in the scrimmage. So he's making big plays. I thought he dominated the camp whenever he was playing. Still, you know, he ends up finishing lower in the RSCI than I think, definitely than he should have. Yeah, he should have been number one. But I know some people rely on the RSCI as like a kind of like a tool for the hypothetical of choosing guys out of high school. I still feel like he would have been, if he wouldn't have been the first pick, which I think there might have even been a chance, I think he would have gone 2 or 3. Like, he just, there was just something so special there as far as his athletic ability and strength and basketball acumen. And that's why I feel he's an MVP candidate down the line.
Yeah, totally. I think we roll into next year. He's on that all-star, you know, he's on that all-star game, you know, all NBA. He's in those conversations, like, period. And I think, you know, New Orleans, they're in this really interesting position of, like, they, because of that Anthony Davis trade, like, they have all these young guys. They're getting, you know, they might not make the playoffs this 2019-2020 season. Yeah. So you're getting, you know, another lottery pick, you know, top 15 pick. They could really build something. He's the core of that. He's so special that I just think, like, he's going to go down as a great career. You know, hopefully he stays healthy and continue to just, like, do what he does.
Yeah. And as we were talking about, like, Karl Anthony Towns, like, having the rookie year that made you kind of project him possibly being better than Anthony Davis, Zion still, like, hasn't necessarily got everything together yet. Like, he still isn't the level of defender that you would hope for. But I just think there's so much potential there. I think once he does some work with his body, which I think there's a lot to work on as far as durability and things along those lines. But I see him working on that, and I think that he could get into fantastic shape. Still maintain the fact that even if he's not the strongest player in the league, he's going to be one of them.
Yeah.
His ability to get shots around the basket at a high rate has already been completely evident. He's had some incredible performances, like that first game against San Antonio, that 3.5 minute stretch where he scores 17 points, those 4 3-pointers. Like, the guy is shooting. What can you do?
Those are things you can't do in video games, you know, like, he's doing in real, like, in the real world.
Yeah. I was like, players don't usually get me to jump off my couch during the regular season, especially in their first game in the NBA. But that was an incredible performance. You know, got to watch him a few more times. He had that 35-point game against the Lakers, against LeBron, like, almost going shot for shot with him. His ability to get shots around the paint, his hands, I still think he's a tremendous passer. So there's even more things to work with as far as that goes, and, like, the ability to run an offense through him. I think there's a chance you could play him at the five and at the four due to his ridiculous.
Yeah, I think, you know, depending on the team you surround him with, like, he has that potential for so many different scenarios and so many places you can plug him in and so many things that he can do. Like, it's such a group of tools. So that's our ranking, that 2010 decade. You know, you look at that, there's some pretty good players there. If you guys have any thoughts or opinions on, you know, that you feel strongly about and you want to start the conversation, definitely on YouTube, you can do that here in the comments. If you're listening to the pod on Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, you can always shoot us an email, viselandpod@gmail.com. Leave us a review and let's, you know, keep these conversations going. If there's anything you'd like us to kind of discuss, talk about, any things that are on your mind basketball-wise, let us know. That's what we're here for.
Yeah, and 6 out of 10 of these guys are, like, looking like Zion, I think, is a guy who will be an absolute all-star. Ayton, there's still maybe a bit to go there, but I certainly think he projects to be one. You see, with these 10 number one picks, a lot of great players end up coming out of it.
I mean, hey, 66.
Not necessarily always the best player in the draft, but a lot of really good players. So if your team gets the number one pick this year, whoever is picking, you're probably getting a good player. The chances are you're getting at least a role guy.
Yeah.
At the very least. And then usually an all-star. Doesn't always happen. But, yeah, it was a really interesting exercise to see – to go through this past decade and see these last 10 number one picks. Thank you so much for stopping by for Viseland this week. You can email us at viselandpod@gmail.com. Follow me at NBA Draft Mikey V. Follow Jason at Jay Weisenberg. Follow Viseland at Viseland on Twitter. And keep rating, reviewing, subscribing. We would love to have more of a conversation. Like, I used to write on the NBADraft.net message board, and I loved talking basketball with a variety of people. I still do.
Yeah.
And just thank you so much for coming to Viseland, and thank you so much for the support.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll see you guys on our next Wednesday. Have a good one.